This is the Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. Dr. Dannenhofer with Douglas County Public Health wasn't able to join us today, but Lane County Public Health's Dr. Patrick Ludke is here. Welcome, Dr. Ludke.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here today.
So the Delta surge here in Oregon has been going on for weeks, and we've seen additional hospitalizations and deaths. And today, Lane County Public Health announced two additional deaths and 178 new and presumptive cases of COVID-19. But are things getting a little better? Are hospitalizations on the decline? Are you seeing improvement, Dr. Ludke?
Yes, indeed. Things are getting a little bit better. 170-some new cases is still too many, but our hospital case totals have dropped. Persons on ventilators and in the ICU have dropped a bit, so they are less stressed. Unfortunately, as we've seen across the country, when these waves come through, the first thing you see is more cases. Then within a couple of weeks, you see more hospitalizations, and then after that, you see more deaths. And we've had 30% of our deaths in the last 60 days, and it's a sad statistic.
Do you expect that the Delta wave will end at some point soon? And then also, do you think there will be other variants that will bring new waves?
This will absolutely end. We will get past the Delta variant. We're on the downward part of it. It's not going to be a really steep downward curve, but it's dropping. And by Thanksgiving, we'll be in a different place. And I think the question about other variants, well, they're out there. You know, as long as people are getting sick, we're giving the virus an opportunity to mutate. And fortunately, most of those mutations don't provide any benefit and they die out. But occasionally you get something nasty. So we are at risk for another variant sometime soon. We've been fortunate so far that all of those variants that have circulated have had some challenge with the vaccines that are out there. And I expect that will continue, but we're always worried that something will mutate out of protection from the vaccine.
With the vaccine mandates, including those for healthcare workers, educators, and now Lane County employees, are there more people getting the vaccine?
There are indeed. So I think probably longtime listeners to the show know that we had the massive mass vaccination clinics for months in the spring. And then interest died out, in May, June. But then as Delta started to hit again, I think people got interested again. They saw how nasty it can be. So we've had a big increase in the number of people being vaccinated over the last, 45 days or so. And that's a good thing. We really do need to get more protection in the community to prevent not only disease in our community, but again, the opportunity for the virus to create nasty new variants.
We've heard that at some of the public health vaccine clinics, workers have faced harassment and rude behavior. How are folks holding up with this continued pandemic and then that added stress of angry people?
Yeah, it's an unfortunate occurrence. And what I would say is, look, I'm tired of COVID, and I think people who are working in the healthcare space are tired of it. I think businesses are tired of restrictions. I think many are tired of even talking about it. And that's a problem. And on occasion, people will, at some of our mass vax events or even at hospitals and clinics, they'll voice their opinions, I think, pretty forcefully. And I think that's a shame. We do live in a country where, we have free speech and people are able to say what they want to say, but I would hope it's respectful. And what we are doing at the health departments and other health departments is helping our staff with appropriate data points, appropriate response mechanisms, preventing them from entering into those tough conversations to begin with, which, of course, is the safest way to move forward. And then at some of our events, we have added security personnel where we have a specific concern. And it's a shame we have to do that, but that's the space we live in today.
And what about vaccine exemptions? What are the health conditions that would mean a person shouldn't get the COVID-19 vaccine? And for those who can't, what are other options they can use to protect themselves and their families and community?
Oh, I think those are really good questions. So, when vaccines haven't been around that long, right, we don't know all of the possible side effects, but we now have 9 months of use with these vaccines, and we have a much better sense of what is a possible challenge. And, of course, the biggest one is an allergy to one of the products. So a small number of people know even before they are offered the vaccine that they're allergic to one of the components. Polysorbate is one of those chemicals that some people are allergic to, you know, a very small number, one in a million or so. But there's a chemical in both of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines that's related to polysorbate. So if somebody has an allergy to that product, if it's a life-threatening allergy, they shouldn't get it. Also, if they have received a first dose of a two-dose series and they had a severe allergic reaction, well, they shouldn't get the second dose. So it's typically allergies of a severe form against any of the products. And those are the, you know, that's the main medical exemption. And hopefully by now most people know whether or not they fit in one of those categories, or their medical provider does. And then in terms of what can people do to be safe, well, some people are eligible to get a third dose because their immune system isn't working so well. They don't get neutralizing immunity from the first two doses, and they can get a third dose. And we have some pretty good studies. One well-quoted study from Johns Hopkins of people with solid organ transplants who did much better with a third dose. They didn't make much of antibody at all after two doses, but after a third dose, they made some. So what they can do, what our listeners can do is work with your provider, work with your pharmacy, wherever it is you choose to get your vaccines, and find out your eligibility criteria. Is two enough for you? Do you need three? Probably, Rachel, we're going to get to the conversation about the booster dose votes today. And know what you're eligible for. And if you don't know, go to a provider and find out.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about booster shots. Today, a panel of experts advised the FDA to approve booster shots only for people who are 65 or older, not for everyone. So are you surprised by this advice?
I am not surprised. And I've said on this show several times that in a pandemic, you have to make tough decisions that may not always have the data involved to direct you one way or another because of the terrible disease that you see in a pandemic. But we now have a fair number of people vaccinated. And the third dose issue for everybody 16 and above, which was voted down today, I just didn't think there was enough data for the younger populations, the 16-year-old, 20, 30, 40-year-olds. So I wasn't surprised the first vote was negative. Then they reformulated the question for people 65 and older and those at risk of severe disease, and the vote was unanimous that, yes, the booster should go ahead. And I think we do have good data on risk, and we have good data on response, and that was supported.
Well, we did get a question about booster shots, and here you go.
Hello, this is Nancy in Eugene, and my question is, are the booster shots the exact same formula as the original shots, or have they been adjusted due to the new strains? Thank you. Bye.
I am happy to tackle that one. So the booster shots for adults will be the same. And I actually think it's a better question maybe than some listeners will realize, because we have all sorts of different formulations of vaccines on the market for other viruses or bacteria. And sometimes the booster is different. And the booster, for example, for whooping cough is different. It's called Tdap. It's different than the primary series of vaccine. So right now the boosters are the same. And if we get some crazy variant, they probably will tweak the vaccine a little bit to make sure that variant is captured in future vaccines. But the booster will be the same for now.
And just with this decision or this advisory that came out today regarding boosters, it does raise for me the question about when we will know about vaccine approval for younger kids.
It does. And, you know, the FDA will continue their due diligence, looking deeply into the data. And most of us expect that we will probably have at least one pediatric vaccine for children under age 12, probably down to age 5, probably 5 to 11 years old, by Halloween. And that's the way it looks like everything's lining up. It might not happen, but I think it's going to happen.
Well, here's a question about numbers. It's a voicemail. I will play it now.
Hi, my name's Kim, and I live in the Eugene area. And my question about COVID-19 is this. I keep hearing from people who are not concerned about COVID that every year we lose the same number of people to flu that we've been losing to COVID. And while I hear that we have 1,800 deaths in the United States every day from COVID, I've not heard what the number is for the flu in a normal year when we don't have COVID. So I'd like to hear a comparison so I can talk eloquently to people who keep telling me that this is just like the flu? Thank you.
Oh, that's a really good question. So you're really tapping into my mental Rolodex here, I think, pulling through data. What I would say quickly is CDC did an evaluation of a 10-year time frame for flu across this country. And believe it or not, every flu year is not the same. Some flu years, we have more deaths than others, more hospitalizations than others. And the range that the CDC gave in that study was roughly, I don't have the numbers exactly, I apologize, but was roughly about 15,000 deaths per year up to about 65,000 deaths per year in a typical flu year. So some years, again, you know, are worse than others. You might get 50 or 60,000. Other years might be pretty mild. You get 15 to 20. Now, we have had many, many more deaths from COVID than we have had from flu. And the comparison really is an apt comparison because they're both respiratory viruses. But beyond that, no one had prior immunity for COVID. So 7 billion people on this planet were susceptible and we're going to get more cases. When a pandemic flu virus occurs, it's pretty similar to that. Everyone is susceptible. No one has prior immunity. And that's when you get those huge amounts of deaths. So right now, typical year, somewhere between 15 and 65,000 flu deaths in America. That's just North America. That's not the whole planet. And for the first year of COVID, we had over 300,000 deaths just from COVID in North America. So they're not really comparable.
All right. Thanks for that. We got a question via email from Jackie who wants to know why there aren't more COVID testing opportunities available in South Lane County, mentioning that for the most part, they can only get testing if they come into Eugene Springfield, and they're also wondering about vaccine access as well.
Okay. We don't have enough testing across the country, much less here in Lane County or in the listening area for KLCC. What I would say in the Cottage Grove Creswell area, Nova Health has a facility down there. Nova Health is doing testing. And they've been a great partner. They brought up COVID testing early on, and they provide a lot of testing in Lane County. There's also a Walgreens down there that we track that is providing testing. So, you know, feel free to go to one of those two places. And then in addition, and I don't have exactly when or where, but there are two main roving testing teams that rove throughout our county, and other counties also have them. So our Lane County Public Health staff send out teams giving both vaccines and doing testing. And look on our website for when we will be in the Cottage Grove Creswell area. And the University of Oregon also has teams. They wrote a grant with the National Institutes of Health and got money to do roving testing. And they rove around in, I believe, 9 different counties, including Lane County and Douglas County. So we just added their testing information on our website today. So if you go to the Lane County Public Health website and you follow the ways to get to the testing areas, you can find out where those will occur.
You're listening to The Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald with Lane County Senior Public Health Officer Dr. Patrick Ludke. And we had a question from someone who has long COVID. And their question is, have you heard anything about effective, not anecdotal, relief or a cure?
Oh, my. Are you going to play something or is that the
No,
question?
This was their email.
Okay.
And they just... This might be a tough one.
Yeah, it is a tough one. Well, first I would say that we do have in Oregon at OHSU, the Oregon Health and Sciences University, there is a separate clinic for COVID, for long COVID. And connect to that if you can. Have your doctor, your nurse practitioner down here connect you. And they are doing all sorts of research, working with other COVID, long COVID centers in the country, so they all learn together. Next, there are some anecdotal, there are some research reports that are helping us point some of the treatments in certain directions. And the challenge is, long COVID is not a single disease state. It's not a single presentation. Some people have predominantly neurological symptoms with long COVID. They have concentration difficulties, etc. Some people have predominantly muscular problems. Some people have predominantly GI problems. So it doesn't appear as though the damage that was done is always the same. And of course, that means the treatment might be different. So one of the areas that I'm still kind of interested in is some people who have had long COVID symptoms, you know, COVID symptoms beyond a month after their infection, get better when they get vaccinated. And I think that's interesting. We're working to tease out who gets better. Is it just the neurological symptoms get better or just the musculoskeletal symptoms? I don't know. But absolutely get connected because we all need to learn together.
We got an email from Gary who says, in trying to achieve herd immunity, a lot of emphasis is placed on getting vaccinated. Are unvaccinated people who contract COVID and survive immune to the disease? And doesn't that help increase the numbers needed to obtain herd immunity?
Oh, I think it's a really good question. You know, herd immunity is, of course, a goal, and we're not going to achieve 100% immunity. We don't need to prevent wildfire outbreaks for COVID, but we're not going to achieve the type of immunity we want. But yes, we count all the persons who are immune. The problem is that if you get a natural infection, you don't get immunity from a vaccine, or you don't get immunity when we give you antibodies. If you get a natural infection, some people make a lot of neutralizing antibody and some people make almost none. So you can be infected and have very little immunity. And a few months later, you can get infected again. And typically, it's people with mild infections who make very little antibody. And people with severe infections tend to make a lot and they're more protected. But sometimes people with a mild infection make a whole lot of antibody and they're well protected. We just don't fully understand. So long story short, yes, we count infections. And we count immunity from vaccination, and we add those together and say what percentage of the community is probably immune now and what's our level of risk going forward. But those numbers are a little bit squishy because it's not always the same in each person.
Gary did have a follow-up question asking if someone's been vaccinated and had a booster shot, is it still possible for them to carry or transmit the disease to someone who hasn't had the virus or been vaccinated?
So that's another good one, because there's been a couple really good studies recently showing that people who have been prior infected with COVID, so let's say you got hit in the first wave in Oregon last March of 2020, when it first showed up in our state, and you now get vaccinated, you have primed your immune system through that infection, and you get robust production of antibodies. And it's neutralizing antibodies, and you have good immunity. So that's a really good thing. But it's not 100% immunity. If you are overwhelmingly exposed, let's say you live in a dormitory, for whatever reason, college or a job corps site or wherever that might be, and you're just breathed on by a whole bunch of people who have COVID, you still can be overwhelmed by that infectious pressure. So the risk is out there. You know, no vaccine is perfect and no immunity is perfect. And we saw that in 2006 with a different respiratory virus, mumps, in Iowa. Fully vaccinated populations who, you know, the mumps vaccine isn't perfect. It's 80% or so effective. But fully vaccinated people who were in college campuses with really intense exposure, unfortunately, large numbers of people got mumps because the infection pressure was just so high.
All right. Here's a question from someone getting ready to teach at the University of Oregon.
Hi, my name is Laurie, and I'd like to know if I should be concerned about teaching at the University of Oregon in a classroom that does not provide social distancing among the students and perhaps with the teacher. Thank you very much.
Well, I think I would start to say we should all be aware of the risk and do all that we can for prevention. And the first point would be to get vaccinated. The second point is, I know the university hasn't started its fall session yet, but the early rates that I've heard from various persons is that the vaccination rate amongst student, staff, and faculty is going to be very high. I don't know how high, but over 80%, as I understand it. So that will decrease the risk. So absolutely have the university promote vaccination, and I know they're doing that well. And then third, you do want to ensure that, especially people who are symptomatic with COVID-compatible symptoms, so they have a cough, they have fever, they have shortness of breath, they shouldn't be in the site. They should be removed from, you know, exposing others. And she, as the teacher, I don't know all of the logistics and all of the rules, but I would expect that she has some power in her classroom to say, you know, I think you're sick. Can you go to the student health center? And the student health center is open. We work with their staff all the time. So I would consider that as well.
And the U of O is also requiring, not only requiring proof of vaccination, but also mask wearing indoors. Isn't that right?
They are. And for those persons who are unvaccinated, I believe they also are going to have weekly testing for the unvaccinated. So there's a lot of levels of protection. In fact, I have to say, the university might be one of the safest places to be, you know, in the coming months.
Well, here's a question we got by email from someone who says, I will be part of a staff at a vaccinated-only mask-wearing indoor large event. We will be wearing issued cloth masks. Should I also wear an N95 mask under the cloth mask to add more safety?
So 2 points here. The first point would be, make sure you have a good-fitting mask, whatever it might be. You know, some masks, they pucker and bulge and you know, around your nose, around your mouth, around your chin, and they're just not providing, you know, really good protection. You can double mask if that's the case. One mask over another will keep those points with much better seal. My second point is you should really know your risk and your interest in risk. So if you are high risk for whatever reason, this caller doesn't say her age, doesn't say if she has immunocompromise. If you're at high risk, you know, consider, is there something else I can do that won't put me in a potential harm's way? And then if you're not at high risk, what level of risk are you willing to tolerate? And I think that's different for every one of us. And I think those questions are really important to ask, though, whether it's a work-related potential exposure or something just in your personal life. Do I want to choose to go to this outdoor event or this indoor event?
Quickly, we had a question from Jill, and I'm afraid I don't have her voicemail, but she was asking about cloth, reusable cloth masks and how long they last. If you have had a reusable cloth mask and you continue to launder it, is there a point where it's no longer going to work?
Yeah, I mean, the key point here really is how tight is the weave? And over time, of course, we've all seen, you know, sheets or shirts that become thinner and thinner and thinner, right? Because it ends up in lint in your dryer, right? So the same thing can happen with masks. Just take a look at the weave. Can you see through it? It probably is losing too much fabric and replace it. But we don't have really good science of saying, is the airflow A, B, or C, and when to throw it away? Just get a sense of, looking at it up to the light, can you totally see through it really easily? Then probably virus is getting through. Time to replace it.
Well, thanks so much, Dr. Ludke.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Rachel.
Dr. Patrick Ludke is the Senior Public Health Officer with Lane County. I'm Rachel McDonald. You can listen back to this show and other Friday shows at our website, klcc.org. And if you have questions for next week's Friday show, please send them to news@klcc.org as an email or voicemail. You can also leave us a voicemail at 503-877-3198. Be safe, be well, and enjoy your weekend. This is KLCC.